Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Kalen Patterson, Midwest Muscle PPP Real Talk in the house. And this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in all of the world. And if you, yes, you, are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to draw your gauge like water's eye.
Like a mass truck to ice cream with sprinkles, the chocolate sprinkles.
And some snickerdoodle powder if you need it. But anyway, check us out at p4pmuscle.com. And now let us chit-chat with Amanda. Hello, Desiree. How is your day?
Hey, you know, my day was just fine. I am a little sleepy, though. I have to confess. I'm a little sleepy. I'm not sure what all that's about. But I'm going to liven up here because we have a show to do. And I don't know what you guys have going on in Illinois, but we're supposed to have a pretty big storm rolling through tomorrow. So if
well,
you guys have the
amount of cold, I don't know where the snow is going to come from because it's just frigid cold here right now.
I know. I think we're supposed to have just everything, just elements and ice and
winter.
Rain.
It's winter.
And stuff. And stuff. It's just going to be the stuff, Kalen. It's going to be the
weather.
Stuff.
It's weather.
It's weather in the winter.
Yes.
It's weather in the winter. So I know we're talking about weather in the winter, but I'm going to shift gears here and talk about something that we really don't talk about on this show, and that's Justin Bieber, the Biebs. How many of you out there are fans of the Biebster? I've been watching this kid since he was tiny, and now he's grown and creating all kinds of drama on his own. But the one of the newest reasons he's in the news is that he finally came out and shared that he has been battling Lyme disease
Wow.
for like the past couple of years. And so, you know, Lyme is one of those diseases where you hear about it in Iowa, I guess, and probably in the Midwest because it's associated with tick bites. But I'm not sure, you know, how many other folks are familiar with Lyme disease. But now that Justin Bieber has come out that he's been battling with it, and, you know, there have been other celebrities that have come out and talked about dealing with Lyme disease as well. I'm hazarding a guess that notoriety of this disease is going to shoot through the roof here. I mean, I'm sure ever since Bieber came out with his tweet, people have just been Googling Lyme disease left and right to try to figure out what he's talking about. And so to help us figure out and share what Justin Bieber is talking about, our guest tonight, one that is near and dear to my heart, my husband, Mr. Corey Carruthers. He is a survivor of Lyme disease. That's right. We got the Hubs on the show. So, Corey,
yes,
why don't you go ahead, introduce yourself, tell Listener Land a little bit about yourself, and then we'll get down to the nitty-gritty and just talk about what Lyme is all about.
Well, yes, I am Corey Carruthers. I have been battling Lyme disease since I would probably say I got bitten back in 2008, and after I got bit, it looked like a half bullseye. It almost looked like a ringworm, and at that time, I was kind of pretty much Lyme illiterate and didn't know what it was, and so I just kind of chalked it up as just ringworm, and I didn't get sick. Nothing ever happened to me. Until about a year and a half later. And then my right elbow, my arms just started to twitch, got tremors in that. And then the next day, it was my other elbow, just the muscle started twitching. And then the third day was my whole body. And that time I knew something was wrong, horribly wrong. And started going to see the doctors, and it was just a nightmare. And throughout that time, I'm not sure how Justin Bieber's, what his symptoms are as far as it can mask so many different diseases, such as MS, ALS, fibromyalgia. I mean, there's a ton of diseases out there that it does mimic. But when I went in, they were checking for MS and ALS and, you know, some pretty scary things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was definitely eye-opening.
I bet it was.
Yeah.
And actually, if I could jump in here for a second. So Lyme disease, I guess we've talked about the name, but we haven't really talked about, like, what it is. And I mean, and it's hard to even describe what it is, but it's an infectious disease, and it's caused by the bite of a tick, but not just any tick and every tick. It is, and I never pronounce this right.
Black-legged deer tick.
But the official name for it is it spirochete, spirochete, spiro something?
It's called a spirochete that lives inside the tick.
Yeah,
spirochete is actually a bacteria.
Yes.
So it's actually a bacteria.
Yeah.
And that's
another.
And bacteria are really hard to kill. Really hard to kill.
Yep. So you said it was a spirochete. So another name for it is the Borrelia burgdorferi. So a lot of big names for it.
Yeah.
But in case anybody's wondering, it doesn't. Not every tick carries this. So it's just the black-legged deer tick that Corey was sharing about, and it's usually found only in, like, I think, like, the Northeast and the Midwest states. Corey, is that right?
Correct, but pretty much everywhere you can get Lyme disease in any state. But the highest concentrations are found in the upper Midwest and the eastern part of the United States. When you go down south into Missouri and further south down into Texas, it's known as the Lone Star tick or Lone Star disease. You go further west, it's known as Rocky Mountain fever. It's basically all the same bacteria. Well, a little history back in, I believe it was the late 70s, I think, really ground zero for Lyme disease was a place called Lyme, Connecticut. And that's where it was discovered, and that's where the name comes from. It's from Lyme, Connecticut. That's where it was discovered.
All right. And so if you like conspiracy theory like I do, and maybe you do too, Kaylin, but I believe there was an article in Time Magazine, and I'll have to see if I can find it, but an article in Time Magazine or one of those reputable magazines, I think, if it wasn't fake news, stating that, you know, the government had finally fessed up that maybe they were doing some experimentation with such a bacteria.
The conspiracy theory, you got to bring that up, huh?
Conspiracy theory, yeah. Because it's always more fun with conspiracy theory, right?
Right.
But that could be possibly a source of how this little bug, no pun intended, got released into the environment. So anyway, I'll see if I can find that. See if I can find that. But all right. So Corey, he's
back
got
the conspiracy
disease.
Theory. I could tell you that.
It's a
I know that right
theory.
Offhand.
Uh-huh. So you were diagnosed with the disease. And a little bit of background here. So Corey didn't really share a whole lot of his background, but he's a taxidermist. He's also a hunter.
Yes.
So being in about in nature is not something that, you know, was new, or even being around ticks is not something that was new or uncommon for you. You've been doing it your whole life, but this one instance, it just happened to catch up with you. So it's about a year and a half.
Right.
You started to go to doctors, started seeing symptoms, And how did that process go for you?
Well, actually, I went through, I think, 14 to 15 different doctors. I saw head neurologists from Mercy hospitals to Unity Point or Methodist Hospital. And I brought in a sheet of paper that had 28 different symptoms on it. And I handed it to one of the neurologists, and he kind of laughed at me and said, "This is kind of unheard of." I'm like, "Well, that's what I'm dealing with." And he could not find anything. And throughout all of those 14 to 15 different doctors, they all ran blood tests. But when they ran the tests, they just checked it for deficiencies. They never went ahead and checked my blood for actual Lyme disease, because I believe, yes, there is a huge conspiracy theory. I think there's what did we check out? 30,000 people that are diagnosed with Lyme disease each year, but it's actually more along the lines of 300,000, I believe. If I remember correctly,
yep.
Des.
Yep, I think those numbers sound good. Okay. Yep.
But anyway, they don't want it's pretty much an untreatable disease when it comes to Western medicine. Pretty much you're put on a protocol of antibiotics for, I think, 30 to 60 days. I can't remember what the actual protocol for it is, but and it's just a doxycycline. And after you get done with that through your doctors, they consider you to be done with the disease. That was not the case in my point. My point was I was diagnosed at a stage 4 Lyme disease. I had a tremendous amount of joint pain, muscle pain. I used a cane and a walker for 2 years. I was pretty much bedridden. There were so many times I was married at the time, and she would have to, you know, lift me up out of the couch or lift me up out of the bath or bed and take me to the bathroom. And it was very, very humbling and very humiliating at the same time. And it was, I felt like I was in a cocoon, you know, and I couldn't get out. It was a horrible, I had meningitis three different times, Lyme meningitis three different times, and where you would see things, Lyme disease is also known as a neurological Lyme disease. So it affects everything in the brain, every organ, muscles, joints. It can be found everywhere. Sometimes they have to do like a spinal tap in order to find the spirochete within the fluid of the spinal fluid. So, but there's a lot of different tests out there. We'll get back to the test. One is a test, the Western blot test, that can be done at hospitals. Doctors will kind of shy away from that. So, as I've learned, there's a laboratory out in California called Igenix Laboratories. They specialize in Lyme disease. So I recommend if anyone is having any symptoms of Lyme, I highly recommend that you find a doctor that really isn't affiliated with any hospital, that is independent, and have their blood work done and shipped out to Igenix Laboratories in California. And then you'll get a true test done, a true positive or true negative test done.
Gotcha. So you were sharing earlier, and we've got some listener questions that we're going to get to here, but just to kind of tag into this, you were sharing earlier that, you know, Lyme disease mimics like so many other diseases out there. It makes it one of the hardest diseases to detect. So really getting the right test is so instrumental in determining what you might have. And it took you over a year and 15 doctors to even get to a point where someone could say, yes, that's what you have. It's Lyme disease. So some of these questions, I'm not sure if you're going to be able to, that's a long time to be battling with something, not knowing what it is. I'm not sure if you're going to be able to answer them, but we're going to go ahead and roll through them and see how far we get. Jeremy wants to know, what's the medicine used to treat it, and what are some of the side effects?
So as far as Western medicine goes, the number one, you're going to be put on antibiotics. The doctor will put you on doxycycline. It is very, very difficult on your gut, extremely difficult. And that is a problem with all or most of your antibiotics that you take. It pretty much kills the bacteria, spirochete is one of the hardest bacteria to kill. But as far as, you know, any other kind of bacteria, it's your antibiotics will kill it off. But so one of the side effects is it's called a Herxing reaction. It's similar to what a cancer patient goes through. It can be very, very painful, very difficult. Your body will start, you'll start vomiting. You'll start running high fevers. It's very painful. It's very painful. And especially being put on antibiotics for such a long period of time. I was on antibiotics for about 2 years. Oral antibiotics for about 2 years. So it destroyed my gut. And I virtually have no immune system whatsoever because of being on prolonged term of antibiotics.
All right. So this question is from Bill. He wants to know, and I'm sure those are not the only treatments that they probably have in what you're calling Western medicine or the mainstream medical model. So, guys, there's an example of a few things. Bill wants to know, what happens to the body if Lyme disease is not treated?
You can – it depends on the person. I will say that. Some people, they get a fever. They just feel like they have the flu. And they can get over it with antibiotics, and they'll be fine. But in the meantime, that spirochete is still – the spirochetes are still living inside you, and they are still creating damage throughout your lifetime. And a lot of that will be joint problems or muscle problems. And I think I do have joint problems. I do have muscle problems. I do have muscle shaking and stuff. But I think that's from the Lyme disease, from the spirochete, that it's done so much damage into my body. Usually people can get a bullseye rash after the bite, and you can pretty much get the disease taken care of pretty much right away. But for me, seems it was a year and a half from bite to the diagnosis, that bacteria had a long time to build up in my system and create a lot of damage. And it did. It did.
And you know, and I think something fair to share is in your case, I mean, you know, you've had a history even since you were small of, you know, just being bombarded by different illnesses. So your, you know, immune system has been battling from day one. So everybody has a different reaction to it because, as you said, some people might get it. If there's early detection, they might feel like they have the flu. They can get treated for it, move on with life, and it's cool. Yours, this is almost like a really extreme case, but you made it through. So, you know, some of the reactions that you're experiencing may not necessarily happen to everybody who has the disease, but I know that you've been contacted by, you know, several people who have had Lyme from various parts of the country. And they are experiencing similar symptoms to what you experienced as well.
They do. I don't know how many people have contacted me, but they've all asked me, you know, what did you go through? What can I do now? What are you doing now? And I went the holistic route after a scary event. I was seeing a specialist down, I'll just say another state. And I started to do IV antibiotics. And he was a Lyme disease specialist. He decided to put me on IV antibiotics. I had a PICC line done in my arm where the tube goes straight to the heart. And I started injecting myself with I think it was ceftomaxin, if I remember correctly. And 2,000 milligrams of ceftomaxin, I believe it was 3 times a day I injected myself. About a month and a half into it, my body started rejecting it. And I had 9 heart attacks in 3 days.
Goodness.
And then I became extremely, extremely scared of all Western medicine. So then I changed over to holistic medicine. It probably took me about 2 years to get back into a doctor. Having 9 heart attacks kind of, it'll scare anyone. But luckily, I had no heart damage whatsoever. Praise the Lord on that. Praise the Lord.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. That's a blessing. All right. So we've got some listeners.
Yeah.
They're wanting some more detail on some of the terms that you're using. Like Jimmy is curious as to what is a spinal tap. And several folks are asking what is a PICC line, if you could give us a little more definition of those two procedures.
A spinal tap is where they draw fluid from your spine. And they will use a syringe and draw the fluid with, and they will take that fluid and run the test and see if there's any spirochetes in that fluid. A PICC line is IV antibiotics, and they will make a small incision in the inside of the bicep and run a tube. It's kind of like having a port. They'll run a tube from that bicep and then all the way to the heart. So you can give yourself IV antibiotics that way.
Okay, gotcha. So hopefully that's helpful to you guys. Brett is saying, how can this disease be avoided? It sounds like anyone can get it at any time. Actually, Brent, sorry, Brent, not Brett, but Brent wants to know, how can Lyme disease be avoided?
Walk outside in a bubble. you can't. You can't avoid it. I mean, basically, somebody could be playing, kids could be playing out in their backyard, and they can get it. Everyone thinks that deer or ticks are found only in the woods, so my kids are fine. Typically, the best or where ticks hang out is along the timber in the grass. That's where they like to hang out, but or in the tall grass. I think my son, we went turkey hunting one time, and we only walked, I would say, probably 300 yards. This was in the springtime. And I pulled off, I think it was 9 ticks off of me. And I think it was 8 or 9 ticks off of him, and I pulled off like 14 off of me. So you cannot avoid ticks. Now the CDC says that only ticks carry it. If you follow different Lyme disease chat rooms, they say that spiders and also mosquitoes will carry it. So again, I mean, it's something that really can't be avoided.
But in the same vein, guys, I don't want you to, like, freak out and think that you actually should put yourself in a bubble or avoid the outdoors.
No.
There are a lot of benefits to being outdoors. And, you know, it's just one of those things. The whole reason for sharing this or asking Corey to be on the show is, A, it's timely, because there's going to be a lot of people out there buzzing about it. But because it is still virtually unknown to a lot of people, just to raise awareness so that, you know, if you are outside, you're in tall grass, wooded areas, you know, when you come back in, check yourself over. Check your hair, check, you know, little creases where, you know, a little bug might hide. And a lot of times you're going to come in and you're not going to have anything. You're not going to have any ticks. But, you know, when you're like Corey or his son Mason, who are very active out in nature, hunting and this and that, then, yeah, they're increasing their exposure. And you notice that it hasn't stopped him any from doing those activities. He is just cautious about checking himself over and, you know, making sure he's not carrying them. And, you know, dogs are easily prone. I mean, a lot of people probably are familiar with ticks because their dogs will get them from them romping around out in the grass and whatnot. And so if you check yourself thoroughly and you've got that early detection, then, you know, if you have a tick, you're supposed to get a long needle nose tweezers or something and grab it by the head and pull it out, make sure the head's been removed, and, you know, you should be cool. So don't everybody freak out about it as once. As Brenda said, this stuff sounds outright frightening, and it could be, but it doesn't have to be. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, whatever you do, there's an old way of removing ticks, and that's taking a match and lighting it and then blowing it out, then instantly trying and put it on the tick, and that will make the tick come out. Well, what actually happens is the tick will actually regurgitate whatever fluid it sucked up into you and pushes it back into you before it releases and comes out. So initially what it's doing is pushing that spirochete, that bacteria into you. So do not use a match. Just don't do that. Just use
Forget the match.
Don't use a match. And when you pull it out with tweezers, gently pull on it. Make sure you get it. Make sure you're not squeezing the tick too much, and where you're squeezing the spirochete back into you, the same thing. So it's just a smooth, gentle pull.
There we got you. Hopefully. KP, anything to jump in with at the moment?
I'm just taking it all in because this is a lot of information I never thought about. You know, dang. I have much respect to you, brother. You've been holding it down for a lot of years. It can't be easy.
Been trying to, and I love to work out, and I used to love to work out before I got the disease, and when I did get it, like I said, I felt like I was living in a shell, and I just remembered the person that I used to be as far as working out all the time, and it was just loved doing it, and there I was with a cane walker and could barely move. I mean, it's a tough pill to swallow. It really, really is. And there were a lot of times where I couldn't I couldn't even talk on the phone because of the brain fog that I had. Still dealing with a little bit of brain fog. Still struggling with being articulate. But it was definitely a tough pill to swallow, knowing that, you know, geez, I used to be able to lift this much weight, and now I can't. I mean, it's pretty tough, pretty tough. Maybe one of these days, right, Des? One of these days we'll
Don't let him
get
fool
on stage,
you.
Right?
He still throws up quite a bit of weight. We talk about him getting up on a natural stage, guys. So maybe one of these days. This next question is from Sarah. She says, I have mild arthritis, and I know sleeping through the night is tough if you have all over joint issues. How has it affected your sleep cycle?
I think you could probably talk on that one, Des. my sleep schedule is, well, with my disease, when they first diagnosed me, my doctor put me on a couple different sleeping medications, because when I would close my eyes, I would have all these light flashes, and it was like little miniature seizures. So the medication that they put me on calmed those miniature seizures down. Now, as far as having arthritis and joint pain, my back hurt all the time. I'd have to wear a back brace. You might want to check and see if you do have Lyme disease. I'll be direct and honest with you. There's the amount of joint pain that a person has with the Lyme disease is excruciating. It is excruciating, so you might want to double check. I'm sorry, what was the question about sleeping habits?
Yeah, she was just saying, how has Lyme disease affected your sleep cycle?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When I first got the Lyme disease, I was sleeping anywhere from 14, 16 hours a day. I was in bed a lot. So it was a lot of sleep.
And now he doesn't like to sleep. He's making up for lost time. But I do have a little rant about this, and it's not so much that he was put on medication to help him sleep at that point and get through his little mini seizures, but it would appear to me that no one was paying attention to his progress as he came through this disease, and now he doesn't have those same symptoms anymore, but now he can't sleep without the meds. And
I know.
And I have a hard time not likening this to the opioid epidemic, where if you're going to prescribe someone something over long term, you got to keep an eye on them and make sure that the addiction doesn't run away with them, so that they can wean themselves off of the drug when their symptoms are over. Because it gets to the point then where even if they want to, they can't. And it's so terribly hard. And that's all I have to say about that. So as far as his sleep pattern now, he has a hard time falling asleep and sometimes staying asleep. But I guess you get it done in there, dear, don't you?
I try to. Yes. Yes.
All right.
I'm usually
rant over.
You're usually way asleep ahead of me, way longer before I am in sleep.
Debbie says, prayers for a blessing and blessed breakthrough soon. So thanks for that, Debbie. So you went, I mean, you had a long road to hoe. This was attacking your, motor skills. And as a taxidermist, if you can't use your hands and whatnot, then you really can't work. So that was tough for you there. You were on a cane and walker.
Yep.
You had the brain fog. At one point, if I've got the story correct, you were even headed to hospice care. So what was it that turned this around for you?
I don't know. Well, the third time I had meningitis, my doctors had talked to us about possible hospice, and it never got to that point. But oh my goodness, that was definitely a scary, because no one really graduates from hospice, but. What was the question? I'm sorry, about the hospice.
So where was the turning point for you? Because I know there are a lot of lows also.
The turning point?
You know, you were just in so much pain where you're like, why am I even doing this? But there had to have been a turning point where things got better and, you know, you
it
started
did,
to
especially
move
with the holistic. Yeah. Especially with the holistic medicine. But back up a little bit, I became very, very close to God, became very faithful. throughout this whole experience. There's a lot of times where I questioned God and why he was doing this to me, or not why he was doing this, but why I was being done, or why I was going through this. And there was a lot of questions, and it really tested my faith, and my faith really grew tremendously throughout the whole thing. You know, everything is all to God. Praise God for sure. And then I got into the holistic end of things. I found a doctor that has helped many Lyme disease patients of hers, and they feel like as though they are Lyme disease free. I mean, they're living a great life. And from the time that I started with her until now, she had really turned my life around. So it was the a DesBio protocol. There's several chiropractors that handle the DesBio medicine, but a lot of them do not follow the DesBio protocol. And the lady that I saw was very strict on following the DesBio protocol, and so therefore it helped me out tremendously. Some of the chiropractors that don't follow it, their patients get really, they don't have those same results that I did. So I was very blessed to find her. Very blessed.
And actually the doctor that helped Corey, that he calls more of medicine on the Eastern side of things, she was a Lyme survivor herself. And that kind of started her journey on, you know, becoming more versed in trying to treat the disease. Looks here, question from Carla. She's directed towards me, is wondering, how has my life been changed upon being supportive of her husband in a situation? You know, it's just very eye-opening, but also reaffirming that there are other methods out there for treating, you know, diseases that individuals might have where one medical model doesn't seem to help and they feel like there's no hope, that there are other options that do provide hope. And it also just keeps my focus on, you know, health and just life and how precious it really is. And it's also very motivating to me. I mean, you know, here was an individual who, as he's shared with you, pretty much had his life stripped away from him. And then, praise the Lord, it's been given back to him. And he's out there rocking and rolling and making the most of things. And, you know, very prominent in his field of work and industry, and is just, you know, every year he gets back to something that he gave up or didn't used to do, and is just reclaiming those things. So it just helps to keep perspective on life in and of itself. And, you know, I just think the way that he approaches things are great. You know, and this one's from Aubrey, and is asking if, Corey, you have any memory lapses. It seems like sometimes your short-term memory is not quite keeping up with you. And that would be true. And it's one of the things that you still kind of battle with a little bit. Although I will say there are things that I wish he wouldn't remember that he has no problem recalling. And then, of course, other things he conveniently forgets. But I think that's more of a husband thing than a Lyme disease thing.
Oh, yes. Wow. No,
collective memory.
No.
Collective, right, Kaylin? Selective
you
memory.
You take that back,
Des. I can't take it back because all the ladies out there know it's true.
No, I got, hey, I'm not leaving him hanging. I'm not leaving him hanging. The women stick together, brothers got to hang together too. You
right,
take
exactly.
It
Oh, no, the memory thing, that is horrible. There's so much of my son's childhood and my childhood that I don't remember. And that's very difficult to swallow. Things that my parents say, hey, do you remember when when Mason used to do this or do that, or Corey, do you remember when you used to do this, or you're how you used to say the words, and all that, all those memories are gone. Hopefully one day I'll get them back. But, the memory thing, it's a lot of memories from Lyme disease. It's actually called, from another, I can't find the right word, co-infection. There it is. It's called Babesia. Babesia is another kind of organism that lives within the brain. My holistic doctor has killed the Babesia, but the Babesia shell is pretty much it's died, but it's left its shell on the inside of the brain, and it releases toxins. And those toxins definitely affect my memory, and that's what we're dealing with now. So, but yeah, I miss all those memories, that's for sure.
Yeah, that one's kind of tough. Nathan says, wow, this disease sounds never ending. And Nathan, it does have its days. Some of the side effects are still there. But I hope one effect that we are seeing with the disease as more and more people have to deal with it is that you can still have a very full life with it. But, you know, there's still some outliers that tend to hang on even though you make progress. Question here from Bill. He says, you guys are always talking about alternative methods other than this nation's drug addicting prescription diet. I'm sure there has to be something that can at least give back some semblance of a less painful life, right? And the answer to that, Bill, is yes. I mean, Corey is a prime example of that, where the antibiotics and all of those other things that he was on didn't work. There was a protocol, and it deals in, yes, Kaylin, Dez is part of the name. It's a Dez bio. There are a lot of herbs and natural things as part of the protocol, and I guess protocol is a fancy name for program. So, you know, the program or the regimen that you're put on, and it's highly refined. And it just to be honest, it's not cheap, and insurance is not going to cover it, but it can be well worth it. It can be well worth it. So when I talk about alternatives, they're there. They are not always, quote unquote, I guess, affordable, but if there's a will, there's a way. And so, yes, there are options, Bill, that can make life less painful and better and get to the point where Corey is at. Even though he still has symptoms, he's in remission.
Yeah. Keep an open mind, especially when it comes to the holistic approach. When I was doing the Western medicine, I heard about Dez Bio and the holistic side of things, but I was dead set against doing it because that's how I have been trained throughout my entire life.
Yeah.
A lot of people have. So we're all drinking the same water. And man, keep your eyes open, keep your mind open, and learn and absorb what other people are telling you. And be extremely observant of that. So, I'm very happy with the holistic side of things, the Dez Bio approach. Very happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, and there are still things that we're still learning. I mean, and just basic stuff, not even necessarily associated with Lyme disease, but, you know, we try really hard to work on his gut. I mean, you guys have heard us talk a lot about the gut and the importance of having a healthy gut. So making sure that we can, you know, build his back up and strengthen it. And hopefully, you know, in turn by doing that, his immune system will follow suit and pick things back up. I always tease him that if anybody's going to get sick in our family, it's him. And then, you know, about a week later, I'll have a version of
it.
But I usually bounce back, you know, rather quickly compared to what he does. So, you know, his gut and his immune system are very important to us. So we continue to do our research and just try to practice good health. Are we a perfect diet 100% of the time? Definitely not. But it's always at the forefront of everything that we do. And, you know, I'm okay with that because that's an area that I continually want to be learning and improving in. And like we're doing tonight, sharing the story so that others can benefit from our experiences as well.
Yeah, the gut is huge. The gut is huge. There was a period of time where I was actually taking 250 billion units of probiotics at one time throughout the day. That's a lot of probiotics, but I needed it, especially with all the antibiotics that you take. Anyone that's taking antibiotics also needs to take a probiotic to help build up that gut health. I do recommend that if you do go on antibiotics of any sort.
Yep. So, and I just learned something. No, I'm going to throw a new word at you. Maybe this will be a show for the future, but a word called modbiotics, which is kind of like a fertilizer for probiotics of your gut. So, but anyway, we're not going to dive down into that. And Corey is not fat. He's not overweight.
What?
Improving his gut, what I'm talking about are like the cultures in there. The good bacteria that break down food and all of that good stuff. It's all tied to your health. It impacts your health. It impacts so many parts of your health, not just your weight, not the size of it.
I'm just full figured.
We'll just call him Fluffy.
Fluffy right now.
He's not fluffy even fluffy, right, but gut health, when I talk gut health, I'm not talking about abs. I'm not talking muscular. I'm talking about the internal workings of your digestive system. So maybe it'll be, maybe that'll be a show for the future. I know we've talked about it, but not really in depth. So we'll have to see which of our experts we can twist their arm to come on and talk to us about gut health. But when I talk about gut health, that's what I'm talking about. Now, when I start talking about abs and abs are made in the kitchen, that's totally muscular and that is totally different. It's not what we are talking about tonight. So anyway.
Oh, hold on there.
Oh.
Because you just awakened my mind. I remember there was an article talking about, you know, how we do with the zero fats or fat free, and one of the components of doing that, you know, to still keep some kind of taste to it, was taking one of the products that goes in there and actually helps your gut health. And because of the fat-free way it was made and designed, it was actually weakening that and weakening people's immune system as part of it. And I was thinking, wow, you know, we do so much to cater to being healthy that we're actually putting ourselves at risk, because the research doesn't come out until 5 or 10 years later as to what's been going on with the things we've been eating. So it's a segue that has no point or meaning, but it just made me think about that, how we don't even know how we're damaging ourselves thinking we're eating healthy.
I know the
better. That's what we grew up with. Remember?
Yeah.
Not so much.
And you know, I'm a public relations practitioner by trade, and sometimes just the beauty and effectiveness of true public relations and marketing is so effective, it makes me ashamed because we have duped, as an industry, a communications industry, so many people into bad thinking, like the low fat, no fat, eggs are bad, you know. Cholesterol is bad. Well, added cholesterol is bad, but your body produces cholesterol, so that cholesterol is not bad. We need cholesterol. I mean, just just low carb and just so many things relating to the diet and food and our health that just gained momentum, and people just believe it for years.
Yeah.
And we're paying the price for it. We're paying the price for years of deceptive nutrition marketing. We're paying the price for it right now. And still most of the world doesn't even know it. And so as a public relations practitioner, as a professional communicator, I mean, I marvel at how effective the written and spoken word is, but yet I'm ashamed at how it's been used to just line the pockets of big companies and bring people to bad health. I mean, it's a two-edged sword for me right there.
If the good Lord made it, eat it.
Yeah,
there
that's
you
right.
Go.
That's what
now,
it boils down to.
Now that we're totally off track and talking about everything but our topic, but that's okay. So I feel like we've had some really good questions, and you know, I'm glad to be able to share this information and have Corey on the show. Any last thoughts, Kaylin, before we start to do our sign off dance?
No, I kudos to Corey for holding it together, because we didn't get any questions on the mental aspect of it, but I know that can take its toll when, like he was saying, you're looking at the body that you had as compared to what the body you have to live with after the disease. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, hats mm-hmm. off to that. For sure.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah.
Man. Difficult times, that's for sure. Difficult times.
And, you know, as we
Lord.
Shared, Corey gets, definitely praise the Lord. Corey gets contacted by, you know, I won't say it's like just hundreds of people, because it's not, but it seems like on a regular
mm-hmm.
basis, at least as long as we've been together, you know, a couple of folks a year just reaching out, trying to figure out what to do with this disease. So if any of you are out there listening and you have Lyme disease and you're not quite sure where to take it, or you just want to speak with someone else who's been through it, you know, Corey is open to sharing his story like
yeah.
he is tonight. And, you know, you can find him on Facebook, Corey Carruthers, and just drop him a message if you have questions, or you just want someone to chat with, or, you know, just talk about your own experience and just understand that you're not alone in all of this.
I would be more than happy to help and try and get people pointed in the right direction of more of a holistic medicine. So, yeah.
And there you have it. And there you have it. I tell you what, from Justin Bieber to Corey Carruthers, this is all about the Lyme disease. Oh, speaking of which, I did find that article, and it was by the Washington Post, and it was published, I'm trying to find the date now here, in August of this year, so I knew it wasn't that long ago. And spoiler alert, it says that Lyme disease is not a government conspiracy. It says the real reason for the increase in this stupid disease is what? Well, according to the CDC, there are just more ticks around to carry it. It says also Also, the spread of Lyme disease over the past several decades has been linked to changes in land use patterns, including reforestation in the northeastern United States. Suburban development in these areas has increased the spread of these germs because people, ticks, deer, and tick hosts, such as mice and chipmunks, are in close contact. So no government conspiracy. It's just the increase in the number of ticks and urban sprawl putting us in the vicinity of the ticks' natural habitat is basically what it comes down to as reasons for the increase in numbers of Lyme disease. Okay, Kaylin Patterson, what were you saying?
Well, I'm gonna. You're saying that it's not government related, but then you say the CDC said.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I'd like to beg to differ with that article.
Said. Well, my mama said.
Yeah.
My mama said.
That's right. That's right. You know, I was thinking the same thing. But I am just reporting.
Yes,
reporting
ma'am.
What the
yes,
news
ma'am.
Said. Okay,
we'll hold
so
on to that.
We will. Changing climate patterns can alter the natural environment and longstanding ecological relationship, the CDC folks went on. We don't know where those changes will be, but we know that climate is only one of several very important factors that influence the distribution and occurrence of vector-borne diseases. Oops, did they say changing climate? Again with the conspiracy theory. So the article was in the Washington Post. It was written by Petula Dvorak on August 12, 2019, and it's called "Is My Lyme Disease Part of a Government Conspiracy?" So you guys can check that out and read it for yourself. So, and with that being said, you know, Corey, he has competed in bodybuilding way back when in the yesteryear. So we, we talk about him being on a stage in the future. But most recently, you may have seen him if you've been at a natural bodybuilding venue where we have both been. He's also been judging as well. So he's put on the judging hat for the Natties, and he still participates that way, in addition to accompanying me on my shenanigans. And Kalen, too, he's been a cameraman for us before, and, you know, he's in the Midwest Muscle Mix.
Yes. Been a lot of fun.
Busy man.
Yep, it is a lot of fun. Well, we're going to have to get back at that in 2020 and get back out
there.
No.
Hey, you're not going to sit there and end this show without talking about all these things that he has planned in the future as far as his career in on the other side of things.
Well, go ahead, Corey. Well, one thing's for sure, we're getting ready to take a trip in March.
That's right.
Are we going to be doing? Where are we going? Where are we going?
Canada. Yes.
Yeah, boy. Hey.
So
we're going about. We're going about the boat.
Why are we going north in March? It's too cold. But we're going to Canada.
I know, that's a crazy question. That's a crazy question. But Corey also judges
Canadian taxidermy.
Yep. He also judges taxidermy competitions. Yes, that's a thing. If you guys didn't know, now you know.
Yep.
And he's going to be giving
every
some
state
of
has.
Well.
Yep, every state has a taxidermy association. They have annual competitions, and I've been judging, 23, 24 years now, taxidermy competitions. Long time.
So, guys, I think we're at the point now where I say, on behalf of Lyme disease sufferers and survivors, taxidermy, taxidermists everywhere, Corey Carruthers, the boy from PCP Muscle. That's right. And this is where Kalen interjects his snickerdoodle shout out.
Because it helps with taxidermy.
Because it does. And when I say, on behalf of myself and the boys from P4P Muscle, your body is a temple, so let's build it.